ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं तथोचयामुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। सो वी आर रीडिंग टुडे फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 20 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द रेनी सीजन एंड ऑटम टेक्स्ट 42 एंड 43। So text 42 Sharadarkam sujamstapan Bhutanam udupoharat Dehabhimano jambodho Mukundo vrajayoshitam शरदर्कां सुजामस्तापान् भूतानाम् उडुपोहरत् देहाभिमानजं बोधो मुकुन्दो व्रजयोषिताम् शरदर्कां सुजामस्तापान् भूतानाम् उडुपोहरत् देहाभिमानजं बोधो मुकुन्दो व्रजयोषिताम्। भूतानाम् उडुपोहरत् देहाभिमानजं बोधो मुकुन्दो व्रजयोषिताम्। शरदार्कां सुजामस्तापान् भूतानाम् उडुपोहरत् देहाभिमानजं बोधो मुकुन्दो व्रजयोषिताम्। शरदार्कां सुजामस्तापान् भूतानाम् उडुपोहरत् देहाभिमानजं बोधो मुकुन्दो व्रजयोषिताम्। माताजीस् शरदार्कां सुजामस्तापान् भूतानाम् उडुपोहरत् देहाभिमानजं बोधो मुकुन्दो व्रजयोषिताम्। शरदर्का ऑफ द ऑटम सीजन अंशु फ्रॉम द रेज जान जनरेटेड तापान सफरिंग Bhutanam of all creatures, Udupa, the moon, Aharat has taken away, Deha with the material body, Abhimanajam based on false identification, Bodha, wisdom, Mukunda, Lord Krishna, Vraja Yoshitam of the women of Vrindavan. Translation: the autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays Just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identifying with his material body, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him. There's no purport. Text 43. Kham ashobhata nirmegham sharad vimala tarakam sattva yuktam yatha chittam shabda brahmartha darshanam. Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Free of clouds and filled with clearly visible stars, the autumn sky shone brilliantly, just like the spiritual consciousness of one who has directly experienced the purport of the Vedic scriptures. Purport. The clear and starry autumn sky can also be compared to the pure heart of the devotee. The spiritual nature is always brilliant, clean and blissful. And this spiritual nature, called Vaikuntha, immediately satisfies all the desires of the soul. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasinduba Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivas Adigaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So translation, I'll just go through again. The autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays, just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identifying with his material body, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him. Free of clouds and filled with clearly visible stars, the autumn sky shone brilliantly, just like the spiritual consciousness of one who has directly experienced the purport of the Vedic scriptures. Hare Krishna. So, in this past few verses and in the present verse today, there's a beautiful metaphors, comparisons given. Today we, of the several, three different comparisons or metaphors given, I'd like to talk about, particularly about wisdom and intelligence. As the translation says that this, just like wisdom relieves the material sufferings. So actually our scriptures, our sadhus, they all talk of intelligence being connected to Krishna. And a fundamental difficulty or real challenge which all of us have is the conception of intelligence that we have. See, in our minds, intelligence is immediately related to perhaps 99.3% SSC results or CBSE results or a scientific discovery or brilliant application in the marketplace. So it's directly resulted in the functioning of the brain. So certainly Krishna says that from me comes knowledge, forgetfulness and remembrance. So there are, not all are equipped with the same academic attributes or the intelligent attributes. But the very basis of intelligence, if it is not linked to Krishna, then that needs to be questioned, because Srila Prabhupada has often said that only a devotee can be intelligent, or that devotees are intelligent. Now, did he mean that anyone who just joins ISKCON and becomes his follower, therefore he is intelligent? Did he mean that? Or is it something to do with dress or the appearance, or even somebody who is chanting 16 rounds? No, what Prabhupada meant is somebody who fundamentally accepts the basic principles of spirituality. And what are these basic principles? That everything belongs to Krishna, to God. Krishna is a person, and everything is meant for his enjoyment. Around these basic principles follow the everything else. And our effort to improve our spiritual consciousness is really directly linked to how we understand Krishna's presence in our lives. And if you go to see, since we are all aspiring devotees who all have an interest in Vaishnava philosophy, we are coming here, we all have inspirations. So if you look at who are the ones who inspire us, the people who have inspired us, either who are in this world today, or our acharyas, the gurus and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, the Goswamis, so many great personalities, the one common feature is always that they were never separated from Krishna in whatever they did. And they did varied things. It was not that they were just a singular, narrow, particular focus. There were so many grihasthas, there were so many occupations that may not come out so prominently in the scriptures, or it is actually, but we don't, that is generally because the philosophical discussions tend towards the instructions that are given. But the way they took care of, like Shivas Thakur or Shivanand Sen, there are many great personalities who also had many facets in their life, what to speak of nearer to our yuga of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's Param Guru. He just came a little over 100 years ago, and in fact he was alive on the planet in the last century. And we had a devotee here who recently left his body at the age of 92, Valmiki Muni, who, when I saw that when he was actually born in 1914, and that time Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually on this planet. So, well, of course he was only 2 or 3 years old, but can you imagine that close, that he was here, Valmiki Muni Prabhu, many of us know him. We could touch him in flesh and blood. And when he was born, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who for us is on a godly level, was actually on this planet. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life is an extraordinary example of how he raised 10 children, how he infused Krishna consciousness to all of them, how even though he was a district magistrate, he would, when he came home, in that beautiful song he says, that when I come home, right in front of my own eyes, my house transforms into Vaikuntha. Now, what is he talking about? The same principle that, well, because Radha and Krishna were present there, not only in their forms in his house, but also in every activity that he did. Therefore, everything around, he just saw it was a matter of the perceptions. So basically, it comes down to how our perceptions change. Real intelligence is when we purify our minds and our hearts, the anarthas start reducing. We follow the process very faithfully. Gradually, our perceptions start changing. You will see that, and if we just keep analyzing our own lives, while we have such a long way to go, but we can also see in the short time that we have spent, that we all had various, many of us would have probably thought at one time, when we first saw a big temple, we said, why are they wasting so much money? Many devotees who are now devotees would have probably thought that, or that what foreigners are going to teach us. We are Hindus, we understand, right? So this kind of, or when we heard Kirtan for the first time, perhaps we thought it was too noisy or too loud. Now do we feel like that? We have a completely different perception. So there will be many different ways. Like for instance, we now understand what is temporary and what is permanent. We understand the nature of the temporariness of material life. When somebody leaves his body or her body, who is connected to our family or to close to us, we also grieve and we pain. But at least now we have an understanding that we have to go. Whether we are ready or not, we'll have to go. And that these are manifestations of real intelligence. Somebody who understands the nature of life, what the purpose is, why we have come here, and what is Krishna's role in our life. If we connect it, and also understand how Krishna and his very loving, who's constant, he's the embodiment of compassion, and in his very compassion he has, whatever he does in our life, any difficulties that may come or any challenges may come, it is only so that we come closer to him. Just recently, you may have read some months ago, one of the most powerful personalities of this world. He was the president of a country. His name was Hugo Chavez. He was president of Venezuela. Now for the last 15 or 20 years, because Venezuela has a lot of oil, this country became fairly prominent, because there is a small group of countries who have all the oil in the world, and the basic competition is to see that whether they are on the side of the capitalists or they are on the side of, or let's say, the Western world, or whether they are away from the Western world. So Venezuela became very prominent because this Hugo Chavez was a very bold personality, extremely bold, and he was, his whole aim in life, as we say, our aim in life should be Krishna. His aim in life was to hit America, and he did everything to make it prominent. So he did everything to obnoxiously, oppose the US. So he had very close ties with Iran and very close ties with USSR and others. So basically, he became extremely prominent, very popular in his own people, because he had socialist means. So with all the wealth, he was kind of just giving handouts to his people. And he had cancer for the last 2 years. So just a couple of months ago, he died finally. So I remember when he died, his closest aide, he was quoted and it came in the newspapers. He said, what were his last words? And the last words of Hugo Chavez, according to his closest aide, was that he said, I don't want to die. Please do something. I don't want to die. This is the exact quote unquote of this man. Now, such a powerful man, such a tremendous influence he had over not only his country but many other countries. At the end of his life, he was pleading, and this was his own aide was saying, so it is not speculation. He was quoted as saying that his last words were, I don't want to die, please do something. He knew, of course, for the last year or so, they did various operations in Cuba and all that. So one can understand that what is the futility of such a whatever short life you have, because ultimately whether you die at 50 or 70 or 80, it is like not even a fraction of a second in the circle of time. And when I was just that time, I thought of one simple lady who, an ISKCON devotee, Srila Prabhupada disciple, whom His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj once almost gave a class on her. Her name was Kunti Devi. And she was in the sense she was hardly visible. Just a typical mother of two. And she had tremendous difficulties in her personal life. But she stuck through all this from New Vrindavan days in Krishna consciousness. So right from 1972 till perhaps a few years ago when she had a cancer of the spine. And she was in extreme pain, very severe pain the last 3, 4, 5 years of her life. And then the last year she wanted to leave her body in Vrindavan, in New Vrindavan. And when devotees spoke about her consciousness, her understanding, so just as a person who perhaps was averagely literate and had probably never gave a class or wasn't really in the forefront, but had the substance, the internal strength was so strong, the conviction and the faith in a guru and Krishna was so strong that she could tide over. And then when the time came in the last 6-8 months, when Radhanath Swami Maharaj talked about when he went to New Vrindavan, he spent some time with her in the last few days, and he said he never saw anybody so blissful. So the devotees used to go to take turn to read to her. And when Maharaj said that, what she said was that, I just can't get enough. I have never been happier in my life. Now she was in severe pain, and the doctors said that she must be in enormous pain. But through this all, she had this such a strong conviction that, and she transcended that. This is the strength of perception. When we actually see, and we see many lives, this is just one example. So when we have concrete proof of devotees who take to Krishna consciousness and sincerely follow it, then when the time comes, we don't know where, but Krishna will give us the strength. So if we have that faith and if we follow the process, we will see that we can actually also transcend that. So ultimately, what is greatness, what is intelligence, is really to be seen through the eyes of Krishna. So what are the... But why do we find it so difficult? Now, it is easier said than done. We say that we should have Krishna in the center of our lives. If you analyze, then the single biggest issue, a common issue, is that our life has so many non-essentials. So, and we may define it as essential, but in the if something really, really as Prabhupada said, the real problems are births, old age, disease and death. There are the only four problems. So somebody who has actually got a severe disease, or somebody who has got a terminal disease, clearly that person would not be worried about a constant battle with the neighbor, or the last 2 years harassment, the leakages may be taking place when the neighbor is harassing, or there's some court cases going on with one relative for some property or the other. Do you think that person would be thinking of that? So everything is relative. So for us it becomes very essential, but actually if we distance ourselves and see it in connection to Krishna, then we know what falls into essential, not essential. This doesn't mean that we don't tackle the problems, but we do it in a somewhat more detached way rather than get so animatedly involved that becomes the center of our life and we can't think around it. And then the only time we think of Krishna is when we are in trouble. And if He gives us something, we say, God is great. And if He doesn't give something, we keep quiet. That is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna will always do what is best for us. God is great not just because He does something nice or we get good marks or we have got some big orders. God is great, is always great, period. Whether we something in our life happens according to our desire or not. So this is where intelligence comes, and the whole process of life, what we call Krishna conscious life, Krishna consciousness, is basically it's a lifetime process, maybe many lifetimes. It's a process of how we follow the science, as laid down by our acharyas and demonstrated by Srila Prabhupada, where we gradually take step by step, step by step. It is so logical, so clinical. Sadhana bhakti, we follow a certain process, and process works. There is a hypothesis and then there is proof. So if we follow that, and if we are, you know, you can always check, and if we are finding internally that somehow we are stumbling, then we can cross-check and see where we are going wrong. So this mathematical solution is bound to get your right answer. But if you got the wrong answer, you have to go back and see where you made a mistake. The mistake will be, but if we are not able to do it, we have to be close enough to devotees whom we respect and who are spiritually stronger than us, who are allowed to tell us where we lack. So primarily, the process of Krishna consciousness is really to reveal our real internal intelligence. When we talk of non-essentials, I don't remember who was discussing this some years ago, but they recalled that in 1989-90, when the temple was relatively new, for 3 months there was a magician's, a very famous magician. He had booked Bharatiya Devan for 3 months. And then he recalled that maybe it was Mahaprabhu, Prabhu or somebody. And what was amazing was that for 3 months means you can imagine the expected popularity. I mean, you have virtually about four shows a week. So that shows how, you know, because devotees or individuals, people would be so excited to see something, somebody who creates something from nothing, seemingly. So magic show means, you know, you create a world of illusion, and it is fascinating. But when it comes to the grim reality of what life is, you know, because and if we were to see the magic of Krishna, how Krishna is actually, if you just see our body, how it is built. We were discussing with one devotee who has a severe back problem, and he was just discussing that a slight gap between the two spinal cords slightly reduces, and then you can't even lift your toe, you can't even walk. It takes 20 minutes to go from one room to the other. It is so painful. So how perfectly designed, how the sockets are covered, how the brain is covered, how everything is just, and from a seed everything grows. So this is magic. Or how Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, you know, for 7 days in the tip of his left finger. Or how he came in his various avatars as, say, Varadev. He dived into the bottom of the ocean and from his dust he brought up the earth. How as Lord Narahari, he came as half man, half lion. How perfectly he fulfilled the boon, or he didn't go across the limits of the boon which was given to Hiranyakashipu, and at the same time he fulfilled the desire of all the devotees, demigods and all, and killed him. Or how at Lord Ram, he comes as a perfect human being, and how he vanquished so many rakshasas. So the magic of Krishna, that magic we don't take it as, I mean, we just take it as mythology or as a fairy tale, or it is rubbished in some quarters. So actually, why is it important that we look at, hear about this? Because the process of hearing is the most important. The process of hearing is what actually starts the purification process. If we attentively hear and then we absorb the philosophy, then the practices will follow. It's not that you blindly follow a practice. Because so many things are mechanical in life. Everything becomes mechanical actually. This is an age of machines. You see, you want to get up, you have an alarm clock. You want to go somewhere, it's either a bus or a car or a train. Everything is, you know, working in mechanical. And life becomes mechanical. You want to go up to you use an elevator, you use the telephone, you use your mobile phones and Blackberries or everything is around us. So therefore we become what we associate with. So there is a danger that even as devotees we will become mechanical, even if we were to follow. Because we may have the external dress or external garb of a devotee in all respects. We may actually go through the motions also. But we may be mechanically pulling down the beads, you know, finish 16 rounds, go around, you know, the cycle, everything's over. So everything like clinically clockwork. But one day goes, another day goes, third day goes, 1 year goes, 2 years go, I become senior, now I become more senior, and I'm patting myself on the back and going on. But actually, if you see, what is the purpose of associating, what is the purpose of hearing the instructions and reading, is then we see how insignificant we are and how much, whatever we may think we are doing, we are not doing anything. And that is the reality. That is not humility, that is reality. And how much more we have to do. Krishna always sees what you hold back. So if you have the capacity, as we discussed about, some are blessed with looks, some are blessed with wealth, some are blessed with intelligence, some are blessed with strength, some may be having a combination of that. Whatever we are given is given with a purpose. It's given where we can use it. And we have live examples around us in this temple and other temples where we have many, many examples of inspiration where people are giving up, living their lives to the capacity. So as we saw in Kunti Devi's case, she lived her life to the capacity that she had. She was not expected to sell 1,000 books a day. Or she was not expected to contribute several thousand dollars a month. And that was not in her control. But what was in her control and what is in our control is our consciousness. What do we do to purify, to bathe it? And how do we constantly improve it? How do we rectify our mistakes? How do we improve our behavior? How do we serve the devotees? What is the best way? And we have perfect examples in front of us. Perfect example. Srila Prabhupada himself was a perfect example. And we never feel that we are in his absence. We never feel. I mean, when we see him sitting here, when we see him on videos, when we hear his classes, you can actually picture him. Not a single person probably in this room has seen him that way in life. But at the same time, we have all seen him. Not only see him, we see him every day. And we... he means so much to all of us. He means the world for us. So we can see that Srila Prabhupada's presence is already there. All we need to do is to see what is it we can please him, what will please him. And if we have been given clear instructions and if we are not clear, we can always ask. That in every aspect of our life we can do that. So then everything becomes pleasurable. See, the mechanical part comes when we have no motive, we have no incentive, we just go through because it's a drab day, we are struggling to chant, we are struggling to follow the regulative principles and we just go through it. But there must be an essence. Yes, it's always going to be a challenge to chant with attentiveness. There's always going to be, and that will remain. But we can always do it at the right time of the day in association. Similarly, when we find joy in serving devotees in so many capacities, in so many ways, and again there are literally thousands of examples in this temple and millions of examples around the world, and we don't have to see the visibility, but there are always people who are so happily doing it. Here also we have devotees who are for the last 15-20 years just one seva happy to do it. There's one devotee who just enjoys sweeping the floors and cleaning, and we know he comes here, I don't know, at least for 15-20 years, 10-15 years we've been seeing him. The one devotee for several years I've been seeing him, he loves to, and very nicely handles the lifts at the shoe stall, variety of things, in the temple ashram also. So likewise, these are the hidden gems which are there, which are for us to observe. So inspiration comes from observation, it comes from a desire to improve. And then that makes life very happy and pleasurable because there is always because our natural tendency is to serve. The natural tendency of the soul is to serve in some way. Because as somebody said that we, if we make our life for belonging rather than going after belongings. So if we belong to someone, to Krishna, but through his disciples and through his many grand disciples and so on, in his parampara and so many devotees, then that we belong to them, we have given a heart, then that is real intelligence. Rather than going after belongings, which actually are a means to achieve to serve. So this perception change is is fundamentally critical. And if we don't do that, then we'll be following the perceptions of what is the what is given as the reality around us. And if you go to see, if we are basing our reality, if we basing our perceptions on what we think is reality, because everybody thinks like that, then actually that is ignorance, and ignorance is no excuse. Krishna is not going to say that, I understand, you know, you are ignorant and therefore you are excused. No, ultimately, that little bit of independence we all have, and that does not require any particular talent or qualification. The only qualification is sincerity and seriousness, and without motivation. So, if we don't see that, then we will be swept aside. For instance, even if you look at the way the world is, you know, you have the United Nations, but we can understand through intelligence that actually after United Nations was formed about 60 years ago, almost 60 countries have come further divided. So from something like 140 or 150 countries now become 220. So it is one way to see that the way the establishment, the order is prevailing over in the world, we are not getting further united, we are getting disunited. Similarly, everybody lords, you'll see all politicians put their hand on the heart and say, we must fight for democracy, democracy. But actually, it is an abuse of democracy. Democracy means one person, one vote. It is so easy to manipulate. A majority of people, not only in India, but if you see overall in the world, there's a larger proportion of people who are in poverty lines than above poverty lines. It is easy to exploit them because you divide them into caste or into classes. The Western world may not have caste the way we have, and how the castes are used in politics. But in the West, there is equal, exactly the same way they will be doing it in their politics. But instead of caste, they have classes. So they will be catering to Hispanics, or they will be catering to the African Americans. Then they will be catering to this segment, that segment, to the women, to this, and then they'll be talking all the things that the other person uses. So it is primarily the goal only becomes that I get elected. Similarly, the values also, there are today, if we are taught by the scriptures that the value is based on character, that is not today. Here the value is on how much you achieve material success. That is the only criterion. If you don't go beyond, if you don't succeed something, then you are nobody. I may have mentioned, I don't know, but I was some years ago, I remember reading in the papers, I was so astonished that there was one famous cricketer, and not an Indian, he was, I think he was from Australia, and in one match, when he was, apparently he was not given out, but he felt he was out, so he walked. You know, he himself walked away. It was such a rare thing when I read in the papers, but the amazing thing was that not only his team, but so many people all over the world, and particularly in his country, they criticized him heavily because he didn't do what was needed to win. So it has struck in my mind that it was an example as to how what is the value today. That is, a person who actually believes that this was not right. Okay, the empire may have not seen. He's not perfect, but he felt I'm out, so he walked, and he was criticized for it. And then his captain came out and said, I would never do like this. And so many people said this. So the comments were filled with that. Similarly, today, if you see the responses that the world gives towards the so-called the real problems or the burning problems, the issues today. Now this recent gambling, there's so much of betting and gambling that is going on and in the cricket matches here. That's taken headlines and, it's really become so prominent. Of course, it's shown more because everyone loves to read that, so they will give extreme prominence. But the solutions that everybody talks of is to legalize gambling. Why? Because, and the logic is that the country will get 10,000 crores by one calculation. Everybody is saying that. And at the same time, they said then at least gambling is okay, but fixing should not be there. So, they may be drawing a line, but not knowing that not going to the root of greed, because ultimately gambling comes from a desire to a tremendous desire to get something quick. Right. Similarly, for alcohol, when one or two states only in the country today have still kept Mahatma Gandhi's prohibition policy, and they're routinely criticized because they say that You may have prohibition in those states, but you will see so many illegal and illicit alcohol, and people are dying. So all those are prominently brought up. And at the same time, the country gets tens of thousands of crores from collecting from duties on tobacco, and this is one of the biggest earners, by the way, on tobacco and alcohol. So if the leadership is thinking only on pure economics and to exploit and seeing how devastating it can be for people who are, fall into this trap and not looking to values, then God help the country. So basically this is the advent of Kali Yuga, that we can see that. So therefore we could be in danger of constantly being sucked into this. Just like we say terrorists are programmed, right? We say that they have been indoctrinated and they go to these schools and they have been brainwashed into thinking that this country is the worst, and by the time they grow up, they just have so much hatred and then they are willing to give their lives. But actually, if you go to see, the economic system is such that it makes us also, we are, as consumers also, we are programmed. That we don't know anything that, that only spend, 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 or borrow, borrow, borrow. That is the motto. There is so much of pressure on India all over the world. I was recently attending an IIT, very nice, it was arranged by some devotees. One of the most prominent economists had come, was coming from Chennai to give a series of lectures, brilliant lectures. And of course he was talking about the values of the traditional economy and the traditional Indian values. And he had all the statistics and all the minutes of all the big of the meetings that are happening, not only in India but also in the among the top 10 countries of the world. Because actually if you, this right to information gives you a lot of access to the past minutes and so on. So he was making the point that here there is so much of pressure on India because India does not consume more. India is not consuming. It should be, there are, everyone talks of this 50 million or 100 million or 150 million consumers, middle class. But what about the remaining 600 million? It's just a number. So he made the very good point. He said whatever they do, his central point was that the problem in the US is not economic. His problem was that it's of lifestyle. Because what is happening is that today, I don't want to go into that because that will take several, a long time. But, and it is a fascinating concept, and it is reality. But when he came to India, he said that it will never work in India because for centuries, and he traced almost 1,000 years of history, he said for centuries, India's whole perception is such that it just won't happen, at least for several decades or maybe the century, because the one thing that goes against this whole capitalist society is the Indian woman. He said the Indian woman's mentality is such that they will save. They will not, they will spend what they want, but that saving is the, that native intelligence is so sharp that no matter what you do, it will not, you can't break it. He said that in India is the only country where the debit card is more than 10 times the credit card. People very rarely use credit cards. You may use all these banks I'm talking about, but they're only in the cities. People use it, and many people keep it, but they keep it as an emergency. So the mentality, we still, that means the Indian values are such that they're basic, you know, even in the villages they will hand over something for the next generation. They want to give something for them. Even in the we may criticize the kind of the way the urban policies are, and the planning is so poor, people are suffering so much, there's no doubt. But from the person, people's point of view, look at that. When they come here, majority of them, they are actually coming from either from interiors of Maharashtra or they're coming from UP, Bihar, Gujarat, or wherever. Most of them will come from somewhere. They don't belong to Mumbai per se. They are now here for maybe one or two generations. And what they do is that they may stay, if they earn 12,000, they will probably stay in 5,000 or 6,000 and send 5,000 or 6,000 to their families. So the spirit of looking at the family or looking at sacrificing, that is an element which is really, can be tapped and is being tapped for spirituality. Because that is a basic element that we have to, we accept that there are many things which are not in our control. People may say Indians are fatalists, but Indians accept, you know, even the villager doesn't have to be convinced that death will come or there is God. Maybe the concepts may be different, maybe they don't have that, and that is where we have to do a lot. But fundamentally, this is where India becomes very different. And that's what they want to change, but doesn't happen overnight. Similarly, when there was an uproar on the, recently it was such a ghastly, some 6 months ago, a few ghastly incidents of rape. All over the world, there was such a huge UN cry. And rightly, it was quite appalling. But when one lady, she was head of an institution in India, and she wrote an article where she said that, that we have to strengthen the laws, there's no doubt. But she said that should we not also think of, in our own ways, that we should try to see whether we can improve our dress code in public, and that we should not provoke it, and etc. And the backlash that came is funny, because I was expecting it, and then you see the next week or two, everybody was just as if she had committed the biggest murder. That the freedom, what they call, don't challenge my freedom. I must be free to do what I want. I'm free to go to hell. This is what they mean, though they don't actually understand it. But I'm free. My freedom should be needed. And this is what the smarter people in the world exploit. People don't understand, but then they allow them to go into that. So if we understand that we become what we associate with, then we'll be careful in seeing that we do not put our... we protect ourselves. We are living in this world, but we don't belong to this world. So when we are, wherever we are interacting, whether we are in the shops or whether we are in occupation, we are in with the relatives, means people who may be not inclined towards spirituality. We do our duties, but our intelligence should be nurtured, should be cleansed, should be protected, and should be fed by the basic inputs coming from all the spiritual tenets. That is, through the process of sadhana bhakti, through the reading, through association, through examples. So that, and that should be strengthened. And if we feel that this is where we belong, then at least we have that's where Krishna Prabhupada said that I have built a house where the whole world can live. I just wanted to end on, just yesterday I came to know that one of the real great heroes of ISKCON just left his body a few days ago. And I wanted to speak to him that because when we talked of Kunti Devi as an example in our movement, this is also something relevant. His name was, even within ISKCON probably majority may not be knowing about him. But as Indradumna Maharaj sent a letter to him after he departed, his name was Anand Shanti Prabhu. And when Srila Prabhupada went to Russia in 1971, June, he went only for 3 days. Prabhupada went for 3 days to meet one professor. He went to a country which is 3 times bigger than India in geography, 350 million people, a highly communist regime, so where anybody who goes there is actually policed. People follow them, and when Shyamasundara Prabhu was the only other person at Prabhupada, when Prabhupada stayed all the 3 days in his hotel room, a small dingy hotel room, Shyamasundara Prabhu went to get some bread and he was standing in the queue and he could sense people behind him and in the front of him, they were asking him questions and the questions were so pointed that he could sense that they were following him. There was that kind of intimidating atmosphere. Prabhupada went only for one single meeting with this person and the only person he somehow knew was the son of an Indian diplomat who had some interest in spirituality. So he came to meet Prabhupada. And he came and he spent some time with Prabhupada in his hotel room. He brought with him one Russian friend of his, young boy. So this Indian diplomat's son did not then, he went and we never heard about him after that. This Russian boy, who later became the first disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Anand Shanti Prabhu, in those 3 days he absorbed so much and conviction and faith in Prabhupada. Prabhupada quickly gave him initiation soon after. And after Prabhupada went, he never went back to Russia. And from 1972 onwards, this young boy, Anand Shanti, he started preaching and on his own, single-handedly in the initial days, he made devotees, many people became devotees and then they started preaching. And you must understand the formidable, perhaps the most intimidating atmosphere anywhere in the world, other than China perhaps, for preaching. Because, and especially in those days, where you could be put into jail for the rest of your life, nobody would know. There was no question. There was no liberty. There was no freedom. There was no newspaper freedom. Absolutely everything was totally state controlled. A communist regime is that. And for such was the impact he made that Indraduna Maharaj writes that in 1981, 9 years after Anand Shanti Prabhu started preaching, the official magazine of the communist regime, the name of the magazine was Communist. There was an article written by the deputy chairman of the KGB, perhaps the most feared spy agency of the world. This deputy chairman, he mentioned that the three greatest threats to the Russian way of life, he said one is rock and roll music, one is Western culture, and Hare Krishna. This was the thing. It was 1981. There was no temple, there was nothing. Just underground. And then, sure enough, in 82, June, sometime in 82, he was arrested. And for the next several years, they described the kind of ghastly treatment he went through, the enormous... he was basically, they declared him guilty of various framed-up charges of, you know, infringing on people's religious beliefs, whatever. And then they were giving him various drugs. He was put in a psychiatric institution. He was strapped to his bed. And they kept on injecting him, you know, such devastating medicines and drugs, which was not only life-threatening, but which was, you know, his facial muscles will alter. He was getting hallucinations. He was in getting high fevers. So he was really tortured and, extremely for the several years. And then when 1990 the communist regime broke, and then he was freed. And, he was a completely physically broken man. But in the recent months again and the years, you know, he was in loving association of all the devotees. And he left his body just a few days ago. So Indraduna Maharaj writes that he gives a personal account. He tells him, and he said that there is no doubt that you have gone back to Prabhupada. Prabhupada has put you in a service. You know, there is no question about it. And please, you have been my hero, and I hope that you could please pray for me that I can also try to do something and get the courage that you had to preach in Srila Prabhupada's movement. So from his example, when we're relating to today, we talked about how people get interested in magic and illusion, and here we see what did Prabhupada do? Is it Prabhupada's magic? Is it Krishna's magic? That somebody goes, is it a coincidence that he goes only for 3 days and he planted one seed in 3 days, just one person he met, and he took off in such a way that today it is one of the fastest growing, Hare Krishna is among the fastest growing religion in Russia. So many hundreds of centers and temples are there. So many people seriously take to it. So actually we are so privileged that we have such a personality, and we probably wouldn't even know about him had Maharaj not written about him and said that he's left his body. So I think with that note, knowing that here is a person who, whatever his background, he was probably 18, 19, 20, didn't go through any PhDs or anything, but somehow maybe his past karmas, he must have been associate of Prabhupada, but somehow he got this, Krishna arranged the meeting with Prabhupada. And then the rest is, you can say the rest is history. Even 100, 200, many years, hundreds of years later, we see the development of the Vaishnava movement in Russia. Even 1,000 years later, this person would have played a part in that, assisting Srila Prabhupada, and practically giving up his life for that. So, with that we'll end. If there's any questions or any comments... His Grace Anand Shanti Prabhu ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.